My name is Henrik Jönsson. I'm a Swedish businessman and an independent commentator on science, European politics, and social issues. Last week, the European Union voted to kill the internet. The vote was a sordid affair of misconceptions, incompetence, and skullduggery. In today's video, I will summarize the situation, its key players, and what the consequences will be. If you appreciate my videos, please feel free to make a voluntary donation using the payment options on my left. It is your support that keeps this channel going, so thank you very much for that. Also, don't forget to hit the subscribe button down below if you haven't already done so, and don't forget to click the bell icon to ensure that you will get notified whenever I release a new video, which I do every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Central European Time. Today, we're talking about the clash between the new and the old, between entrepreneurship and bureaucracy, and between freedom and control. Welcome to the new content-regulated internet of the European Union. I keep forgetting how the internet works in the EU. It's an exclamation I keep hearing from my American business associates when they visit the European continent. For years, European internet users have been given a worsening user experience, where an increasing number of intrusive pop-ups and approval dialogues are required by law. This should serve as a reminder for those of you who think that the internet regulations now passed by the European Parliament won't make much of a difference. In fact, what the EU decides to make into law matters greatly, and the laws quietly passed last week are going to transform the European internet beyond recognition. There are three main components to this story of deceit, betrayal, and ignorance. Number one, the design of the new copyright directive and its dated lack of understanding of what the internet really is. Number two, the lobby groups, the political meandering and opportunistic two-facedness of many members of parliament. Number three, the rapidly escalating democratic deficit of the European Union, its incapacity and unwillingness to communicate, and its deliberately opaque and confusing processes. Let's break each of these three points down. The main criticism of the copyright directive have been focused on Articles 11 and 13, or 17 as it confusingly became known as just before the election. Article 11 is colloquially sometimes referred to as the link tax, and is basically an attempt by newspaper and publishers to get a share of the money major internet platforms such as Google and Facebook are now making. The idea is that each time a big online platform shares a link, or in some cases, even just a thumbnail and a few words out of a newspaper article, the platform owner will be required by law to pay the publisher for the privilege of driving traffic to their sites. There are several problems with this, but the two main ones are: one, it won't work, and two, the internet will be worse off content-wise. For one thing, nobody knows how to structure adherence to a law on hyperlinks. All posted content will need to be algorithmically plugged into massive systems determining who's on the payroll for what, which is likely to trigger an unwillingness by platform owners to publish content that is not clearly identified and part of framework agreements for publishable content. This is likely to hurt bloggers and independent websites who might very well find it difficult or impossible to post their content on social media platforms at all. At the same time, it won't save the newspapers. Laws of a similar nature to Article 11 have already been tried in both Germany and Spain. In Germany, Google simply unlisted all links to newspapers until the papers came crawling back with exemption deals to regain the traffic they lost. In Spain, the government declared such exemption deals illegal, which led to Google promptly closing down its entire Google News service. Traffic to news sources plummeted as a result. Germany is now betting that enforcing their locally failed law on a European level is going to make it impossible for Google to delist the newspapers, I'd say, think again. You're not understanding how a market economy works. The value lies in owning web traffic to a much higher degree than in owning little bits of content. If anything, Google could charge the newspapers to link to them rather than the other way around. The lobby groups that have been supporting Article 11 to protect the newspapers can be compared to the Icemen of the late 19th century, who sold blocks of ice to middle-class households at a time when there were no refrigerators. When the refrigerator was invented, the Icemen protested, and aside from claiming refrigerators to be unhealthy and unnatural, that a tax should be paid on refrigerators, which should go to the Icemen so that they may continue to serve those who still wanted their hand-delivered blocks of ice. Sometimes it's just better to let it go. Just let it go. If you think Article 11 sounds like a rotten idea, you're going to flip out when you hear about Article 13 or 17 or whatever they've decided to call it this week. Article 13, 17 is an outright disaster. It is meant to policy copyright infringements online by making platform owners responsible for user-uploaded content. Any platform older than 3 years or larger than 5 million monthly users will need to install massive content filter systems that will check any and all content uploaded by its users, as the platform owners will be held legally responsible for the uploads of its users. It creates an incentive for the platform owners to play it safe. If the legal status of a piece of content is unclear, it is more likely that it will be refused than allowed. This means that your baby brother wearing a Mickey Mouse t-shirt will make your holiday snaps impossible to post on Facebook, as it's infringing on a copyrighted Disney Corporation design. Any video with a copyrighted song playing in the background will also be blocked, and even copyrighted designs of furniture and other objects appearing in publicly shot videos or photographs run the risk of getting stuck in the content filters. Let me make this absolutely clear. I'm in favor of content producers getting paid, but this law will not succeed in this endeavor. Instead, it will deprive the whole internet of content and make it very difficult for independent content producers to gain traction and to grow. Tellingly, this graphic shows the already sclerotic state of the European internet as it is today. The copyright directive will make matters worse still. A surprising number of small-scale organizations representing creatives, from cartoonists to musicians, were lured into supporting the copyright directive, not realizing that it is chiefly designed to protect the 20th century business models of large-scale content owners, like movie studios and record companies. Individual creatives are already being mistreated by content filters. For instance, when the ownership of a piece of content is unduly disputed and a legitimate creator's account risks deletion due to not having a legal framework in place to support them in these expensive, cumbersome, and time-consuming ownership management processes. The market mechanism the Copyright Directive is putting into place will force all content creators to sign distribution deals with larger organizations who own the muscle to police their rights and make sure that their work is listed in the copyright infringement databases used by the content filters. Independent publishing will be hard or administratively outright impossible for independent creators. Earlier this spring, I was in contact with all the Swedish members of parliament, and they all confirmed that they would be voting no to Articles 11 and 13-17 in their current form, except for the Social Democrats, who declined to answer how they would vote. The issue was sensitive, as the left-wing government recently flip-flopped on the issue and came out positive in the Council of Ministers and approved the directive without a clear mandate from the Swedish Parliament. The day before the vote, several Social Democratic members of Parliament predictably came out in favor of the directive. Most notably, is how Jytte Guteland, a Social Democratic Member of Parliament who earlier had been voicing strong concerns against the directive, also flip-flopped on the issue and at the last moment came out strongly in its favor. Upon being interviewed on the matter, she defended her change of heart based on the assumption that some presently non-existent future technology probably would reduce the negative impact of the directive. The Social Democrats are largely funded by and in cahoots with the unions. Predictably, the unions had come out in favor of the directive just hours before the Social Democratic ministers changed their minds. This all happened the day before the vote, in an effort to ensure that there would be no time for debates in which the voters could hold their representatives accountable. It needs to be noted that the unions in this case represent, among others, the Journalist Association and CopySwede, an organization defending the interests of the film, television, and music businesses. These organizations all rely on outdated business models and have had a long tradition of defending their revenue streams through legislation and taxation at the detriment of the market at large. To add insult to injury, not only did the lobby groups manage to sway important votes at the last minute, a number of members of parliament decided to not show up for the vote at all. I'd like to quote Margaret Thatcher at this point, who once remarked, "When I'm out of politics, I'm going to run a business. It will be called Rent a Spine." To conclude this depressing affair, a total of 13 members of parliament claimed to have voted erroneously. This is a devastating number, considering that the directive was passed with a margin of just 5 votes. And it leads me to the concluding statement on the issue of European democracy and freedom of speech. In software and product design, the term user experience is sometimes used to describe the quality of meaningful interaction between the user and his or her tools. For most products, comprehensive research and beta testing is performed to identify and eliminate design flaws that otherwise would make the product less useful, less intuitive, and less easy to use. It is easy to lash out at members of parliament for failing to vote correctly in a historically important vote like the one on the copyright directive, but this can also be viewed as a failure of the user experience of European democracy. If nearly 2% of the users of a product, by accident, managed to do the opposite of what they wanted to do, the product would never reach the open market, but would have to undergo further redevelopment to make it more user-friendly. The proceedings of the EU are notoriously opaque and confusing, clearly to a degree that confuses even those professionally elected to represent their voters. Many reasons have been put forth for this, such as last-minute changes of the voting order and changes to the names of articles and the formulation of voting issues. This criticism goes hand in hand with the problem of the democratic deficit in the European Union. Representatives of the EU are often heard complaining about the lack of national interest in the proceedings in Brussels, but from a market perspective, it is equally valid to turn the tables on this criticism. The user experience of democracy in the EU is terrible, and it needs to be redesigned. Put it this way. If the operating system of the EU is so poorly designed that most people do not even bother booting it up, and those using it at work randomly end up installing malware that makes it even less functional, you do not need a reboot. It might not even be enough with a low-level reformat of the hard drives and a reinstall. Most likely, you need to get a new computer that can get the job done. At this point, the copyright directive is set to be implemented on a national level in all European countries who are connected to the common market within a period of 24 months. Make no mistake, this is going to drive even more internet tech companies out of the union, making the already failing euro economy weaker still. It would be my advice to raise hell about this. I'm not very hopeful, but it might make it politically more expensive if strong national and local opinion is raised against the more draconian approaches to the implementation of this nightmare law. That, and the fact that Brexit is proving the EU to be like that famous line in the Eagles song, Hotel California. You can check out any time you want, but you can never leave. Do you think a free and creative internet is more important than the legislative preservation of 20th century business models? Please share this video. My name is Henrik Jönsson, and I think the internet is vastly more valuable and important than the EU. Thank you very much for watching this video.